Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as
Maeve and Amy on sex education. Literally, like, the most shippable couple in the entire series, and there are a lot of couples in this series. But yeah, they were just so, like, supportive for each other. Like, day one, they almost kind of had that whole, like, secret lover thing going on in the first season, but it didn't last very long. But I don't know, I just always saw it for them.
Yeah, especially that whole birthday cake situation, that was adorable. So I see it for them.
Yeah. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona?
Not much. Just voted.
Just wait. You say oded?
Voted.
Oh, I was like, did you make up a word right now? Oh, okay. Oded? Yes. Yeah, I was like, oded. Dude, what is oded? I was like, you're gonna have to explain that one. But yes, I hope all of y'all have voted. I hope all of y'all didn't oded. Take that tweet that we posted so seriously.
Oh my god, I don't want to, like, it was. I don't want to be a dick about it, but yeah, I guess the Globuchapultepec or whatever the fucking name. Like, I thought that would be enough for people to know that I was just kidding. Like, come on. Anyway, but like literally an hour later, Klobuchar dropped out, which made me like really happy.
I was like, who are you gonna put a hex on next?
Biden. I've been thinking about names like all day long.
You gotta think of a good one. We really need him out of here.
I know.
We need him the fuck out of here. I recently talked to my parents, and they don't know what the fuck's going on. So I was just like, oh, he hates, like, immigrants. And they were like, okay, well, fuck him. Mm-hmm. We'll vote for Bernie. I was like, lit. It's very easy. That's all I had to tell them. I was like, this is everyone else's point of view. And they're like, oh, no, fuck all of that. I was like, well, there you go.
My go-to with Biden is like, oh, he's a pervert. Like, no, thank you. Like, God.
Also that, mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's really easy to like just be like, nah, he hates immigrants. And then my parents were like, really? I was like, yep. They're like, cool, done. It's switching. So yes, it's I don't know, dude. I think it's just like a really like hard thing to like joke about when people aren't on Twitter. Maybe that person wasn't on Twitter, and you know, it kind of just went over their head. But yeah. I was just like, let me explain it to them, and so they can realize we're not, you know.
Yeah.
This is all just giggles, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, hopefully, you know, they understood. It was all good. We just had to clarify. It's all, you know?
Yeah, but, I guess so.
Dude. Okay, there's been so many things coming out lately, and I'm super excited about all of them. But there's one thing on Netflix that I will not watch, and I refuse to fucking watch. It's the Trials of Gabriel Fernandez.
Why are you refusing to watch it?
I know what it's about. Like, I think Tumblr told me like 8 years ago or some shit. I don't know. I already know what it's about. I've done my little Googles on it a long time ago. So it's really traumatic, dude. I don't know.
I binged it. I finished it. We've talked about it before that I'm like pretty interested in, or maybe we haven't, about the foster system and how all of that works. I want to adopt one day, maybe foster one day, maybe both. Mm. So to me, anything like that is just like, I definitely want to watch it or consume that media. So it was surprisingly informative on like how fucked the system was and like where they dropped the ball like over and over and, you know, things like that. And it is very hard to watch, but I don't know, maybe I'm desensitized from like forever watching and listening to like podcasts about savage murders and all this other stuff.
Oh yeah, that could be it. Like I'm just really sensitive when it comes to like stuff with children. It's like if it's happening to adults, I'll watch it, but if it's like kids, I'm just like, like a part of me just like, you know, it's a trigger warning for anybody that wants to watch that. Don't do your Googles first. And even in the Googles, you're going to realize,
it's pretty horrendous content. Yeah. There's no video or anything, which is like, I think it would be a lot harder that way. It's just pictures and people talking about the events. But there's no video, luckily.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the straight should watch it so they can, I don't know, adults can watch it. It's just too much for me. But yeah, it's fucked up. I don't know. I don't have a lot of words for it other than, like, I refuse to watch it. I'm not going to do it. I'd rather pull my own eyeballs out of my brain. You know, I'm good. Sure. Nope. Yeah, kids, nope. Just not happening. But yeah, brighter news. Have you been watching Hentified?
I mean, I watched it when it came out, and I watched it a while before that too. Yeah, but yeah, Hentified has, you know, it's just so much better than I expected. Yeah. We'll talk about it more later on, hopefully with like some special guests. I don't know, but I enjoyed it. I think everybody should go watch it.
Yeah, it was not what I thought. So for anyone who's on the, I don't know, who's heard of Hentified and hasn't watched it, the episode will be coming. So y'all should definitely get to watching. I don't want to, I mean, there's not really a way to spoil a show like that. There's so much happening. and all of it is surprising to me. A lot of it was more beautiful than I ever thought it was going to be. So the first maybe two episodes for me were a little slow. But besides that, it found its groove and it became something. So everyone go watch it. We probably don't talk about it enough, but please go watch Hentified.
We'll talk about it eventually. Yeah. So also in recent news, the Caesar Awards happened in La Francia.
Pinche Francia.
Yeah. And like, I don't know how many of you guys know, but there's a director named Roman Polanski, who a very long time ago used to make films here in the US until he basically got charged and was gonna like go to prison for like being a rapist and pedophile. Yep. He fled to France, where for some fucking reason they let him keep on doing his thing. And just a few days ago, or maybe like a week ago for you guys, he was awarded like a huge award at the Caesar Awards. And our fave from our last episode, which is Adele Haenel, she walked out. She was pissed. Like, of course she was.
Dude, that was the most epic, amazing shit I've ever seen in my fucking life. I mean, seeing her walk the fuck out and absolutely take none of their, like, hypocritical bullshit at this award show, it was so empowering. And it felt like, you know, why are we still buying into these systems for awards when they're clearly there to protect pedophiles and award each other and pat each other on the back? I mean, she walked the fuck out and I was like, why do we give a fuck about all of this, right? Like, I guess everyone likes to be like, you know, seen by their like peers as, you know, like an actual artist, but fuck that shit. Like, why buy into those systems? So shout out to Adele Haenel for walking the fuck out. And I heard the entire cast, everyone there from Portrait, walked the fuck out. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they followed, which was really cool. There's like a trend on Twitter, Merci Adele. And I would get the shirt. But yeah. So that happened. God. Fuck pedophiles in the industry. Fuck Weinstein. Fuck everybody. All right.
Also, cool. You know, shout out to the lesbians from Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, honestly, fucking amazing. I keep learning more and more about this movie. But anyways, I'm not going to keep talking about this movie. But yeah, y'all should go watch it. I've seen it like 3 times already. Worth it.
Yes, I saw it again. It's in theater like right now. Go find it.
Go fucking watch it. It's amazing. But yeah. Oh my God. What else has been happening other than...
A couple of weeks ago, our episode with Tabard In came out.
Yes.
So go listen to that. We'll link it somewhere. We already posted it on our Instagram. They're a really cool queer Catholic podcast that had my very non-Catholic ass on there. So you know that they're not like exclusive, you know, type of people, but they're awesome.
They're really welcoming. And it was a really fun podcast where we got to talk about like faith and being queer and whether we believe in that or not, you know, like it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. Check that out. And yeah, last week, I guess. Yeah, last week I was in Boston with Favi So hopefully that audio comes out pretty soon. We interviewed a really awesome guest that you'll hear about from Amplified Latinx in Boston, and that was pretty fun.
I recently saw his art at North Park, and I hadn't been there in maybe like a year or two, and it was pretty wild. People were like taking selfies. Yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool. I liked what it was doing to that space. Like, there's someone standing there making sure no one touches his art. I was like, damn, I forgot we're at North Park, and it's gotten a lot more bougie than
it's,
it was.
It's been bougie. I'm sorry, North Park's been bougie for a long time. But yeah,
it seems crazier now. I don't know. There's people like wiping the like stairs as you're like on them. I'm just like, whoa, this is intense right now. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of security, and it was always bougie, but this is a whole nother, I don't know.
It's also, he also has like in Boston at the Prudential, on the mm-hmm. Boylston end side of the entrance. This is a huge, huge place. But like literally you can see it from the outside and the inside. It's such a cool like installation that he has up there. So check that out too.
Yes, please. But yeah, so please go watch all these movies. Please go see Favi's art everywhere you can.
Our sponsor for this episode is us. Go support us by buying something on Teespring. We'll link it in the description, and it's on our website and such. I just got in my sweater today, so I'm pretty excited about that. And yeah, so that's gonna be our sponsor for the day. Go buy some merch from us.
Yes, support, go sponsor us. Yes, go sponsor some broke bitches so they can keep doing this. But yeah.
Yeah, so we have an interesting episode for today. A lot to talk about.
Yes. So we're going to be discussing two very, very different times. Although, by the way, one of them was shot. You kind of don't even know what time they're in. do you want me to go ahead and kind of talk about it?
Yeah, go for
it. Cool. So I'm going to be covering My Own Private Idaho by Gus Van Sant. It's a movie that came out in 1991. So it's going to be fairly different from what Mythe is going to be talking about. But they do tie in. They do have similarities. They're just kind of like inverted stories. They're just flipped. You know, one is completely the opposite. So, but I kind of like that they're very, very different. And it shows you the progression and queer stories and queer film. So, or just queer stories. So I dig it.
For sure. I'm going to talk about the very modern with a 80s aesthetic show called Sex Education. And yeah, but let's start with yours.
Yeah, so My Own Private Idaho came out in 1991. The whole world was like completely different back then. I think this is before your time, aren't they, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were 92.
Okay, the government, like, they know enough about me, like, the rest of the world doesn't need that information.
Oh, right. Excuse me, you weren't born in 1992. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. The truth. Anyways, it stars River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves. One of them's Mikey, the other one is Scott, and they're extremely different humans, and it's two different stories about one queer man and another man who are both sex workers in Portland, Oregon in 1991. So you can only imagine. And this does tie into Sex Education, I will have you know. Sex Education season 2 has a very interesting Shakespeare remix, as does this. And you can even say this movie kind of began the whole let's reimagine Shakespeare in film the same way we reimagine Shakespeare in plays. Because, you know, like, plays like to reimagine Shakespeare, like, oh, let's put a dude in here, let's put a woman in here, let's put, you know, older fucking Mexican lady or something, right? So, this was before, like, 10 Things I Hate About You. This is before, what other, like, Shakespeare, oh, yeah, Shakespeare in Love. Just that whole, like, Shakespeare bullshit genre came from this, I would say. I think he was the pioneer of Shakespeare doing shit. The film is strange, and I want to warn anyone, this is not something you probably want to ever watch with a family member, or if you feel kind of cringy with family members, it's not something I recommend. I mean, the topic itself is about two male sex workers in fucking Portland, Oregon. I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful story about, you know, finding your place in the world and maybe rejecting this kind of outside idea that other people put on you. And I think that's what all queer people do, is they find a place for them to belong. And I thought it was a really interesting concept to even be bringing up sex workers in 1991 and have them be so real. So a lot of the research done for this role, like River Phoenix actually interviews two male sex workers, and kind of like asks them to define themselves. And I thought it was really interesting that the whole movie is about these workers and how they're getting by in life, but a lot of them kind of are ignoring or maybe repressing a lot of their own sexuality, which I feel like now is still maybe a problem, but there's a lot of like stories like sex education. They're kind of reimagining what would happen if people and men specifically didn't repress, you know, their sexuality, their desire. It's not like a bad thing, right? It's only bad if like it's violent, it hurts, and it's legal, right? This isn't. This is fine. So the story is of River Phoenix. His character is called Mikey. He has narcolepsy for some reason. It's a only an important character, like plot thing to the movie, because every time he falls asleep, something weird is happening, and you're kind of thrust into his life, and it doesn't really make sense. And that's kind of the point of the film. It's not supposed to. Mikey's journey in this film is trying to find his birth mother, the woman that gave birth to him. And this is really fucking trash, because as the movie goes on, you'll see as people slowly are brought into his life only to be taken out, and in a very painful way for Mikey. So I'm not going to ruin the rest of it, but his storyline is pretty complicated, and I like that it's not really like a clear ending to the story with Mikey, because there's two fucking main stories and Mikey's is one, but Mikey's story is very, very sad. And what I like about Mikey is that he's kind of open about who he is in 1991, right? Like being vulnerable and being queer at that time was like a very new fucking thing to do in film. So to have Mikey be in love with Keanu Reeves' character, Scott, kind of like made the entire story, I guess, more painful, but very real. And that was kind of the only beautiful thing about the story, if I'm keeping it real, was Scott and Mikey's relationship, their friendship. A lot of the time, the narcolepsy matters only because a lot of the time, Scott, that's Keanu Reeves' character, is found cradling Mikey. And their friendship is really beautiful, and it's really cool to see like two men be sensitive, be kind, be loving to each other without there being any kind of stigma to it, right? And especially to humanize sex workers in that way. So I thought that was fucking dope. The only problem is that I think in 1991, maybe a lot of men were still repressing a lot of what they felt for other men. And Gus Van Sant is like he's an openly queer director now. I don't know if at the time that he was, but at the time, men themselves and the way that society viewed like queerness, the way society saw like sex workers, like all those things matter, because a lot of the sex workers are just like absolutely refusing to have any kind of like homoerotic, like, you know, love or homoerotic anything. They're denying all of this. They're repressing all of this. And it's very different now, right? Like, people are like straight up showing their like ass on like Twitter now, right? So this would have been a great thing for them to like, I guess they were just born in the wrong time. But anyways, the central fucking plot is just Mikey trying to find his mother with Keanu Reeves's character, and somehow they end up in Rome at some point. It's not very important to the story. None of the story really is important. the cool thing about it, again, I go back to their love for each other and the way it affected the whole fucking movie. And that's only half of the movie. The other half is Keanu Reeves being basically... This is a really weird thing that Gus Van Sant does, is that he mixes the story and he mixes the style in which he creates the story. So one half is Mikey just trying to find his mom, being in love, right? And then the other half is Keanu Reeves' story, and he's apparently just Henry V. Do you know anything about Henry V, Maitha?
I know something about one of the Henrys. I don't know that it's the fifth specifically, though.
The fifth? No, I mean, well, it's a play. It's just about how Henry, which his name is, his actual name is Cal. Anyways, he's running around with a bunch of fucking drunks. And this is, like, back in Shakespeare's time. He's running around with a bunch of drunks and, like, troublemakers. And he's the heir to England. And everyone knows it, so... He's just kind of like slumming it. He's chilling with all these other poor people. And then the whole point of his story is that he gives up all of those things to go be king. His dad dies. He has to go man up and go be king. And that's Keanu Reeves' character. And that's only important because he fucking leaves Mikey. And it's fucking painful to watch. And they're like the whole... fucking thing of this movie. They're the central story to this movie, is their love. So watching that disintegrate was like fucking, it just hurt. But this is one of my favorite movies of like all time. So I've seen it I don't know how many times, and it's just really to see two men be soft with each other and to not deny each other of that softness. There's a scene at a campfire where, you know, Mikey finally admits his feelings for Scott. And it was the most nice way of getting rejected. Like, Keanu Reeves' character just kind of holds Mikey. And I don't know, to me, that's like the whole movie. And sadly enough, it's only that scene that I live for. the rest of the movie, I don't know, dude, like... Honestly, I'm so happy that we're past this fucking movie, that we're past 1991, and we're past the bullshit repressed sexuality phase of life. So, yeah.
I have a question.
Anyways,
I have a question. I haven't seen this movie yet. I should preface it with that. So, do you think that movies about that time or about that kind of feeling should just like not really be made anymore, or do you think there are exceptions, or like what's your thought on that? Like, should everything be progressive now? Should everything be sex education now?
No, I'm not saying everything should be sex education. The beauty in this movie and the most painful thing about this movie is how realistic it is, because a lot of the dialogue between Keanu Reeves's character and River Phoenix's character comes straight from the actual sex workers they base this film off of, like real humans that they based it off of. So they would ask a lot of the sex workers, and I felt like that was true to the time. I think we should be true to the time now, right? So 1991, completely different time. They're being true to 1991. Whereas now, everything's a little bit more free. Everything's a little bit more violent at the same time. So I feel like maybe if we stay true to the times and the true to your story that you're trying to tell, then there's nothing wrong with it. But no, I don't think things should just be progressive to be progressive. If you don't have a story to tell that's true, that's honest, then you shouldn't be fucking telling stories, right? So yeah, to answer your question, no, they don't have to be progressive.
See, because I think like I get what you're saying with the whole thing of like you're glad we're past that. But like I still think that there's a lot of that. I don't think we're like as past.
No,
that
I
as
mean,
we should
I mean
be.
in film, even in film, not society.
I mean, if we're going off of the thing of like that, the film should reflect accurately what the time is, and if we do that to our time right now, there's still sex workers, and it's still technically illegal in the U.S. There's still a lot of dudes who like repress their emotions, you know. So I just wonder, like, I feel like sex education and that kind of story being told, like, it's such an exception to the rule.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, I'm not saying that what sex education did is, like, not reality. What sex education did was just highlight something that is possible and is real. Just like, I mean, I don't think that My Own Private Idaho was that reflective of the times either. It was, I mean, part of my cons that I was going to get to is that it was cis, it was white, it was male. Like, all three of those things already make it like, what? No, I'm good. I already know that's not true, right? I already know that, like, they aren't the end of all stories about sex workers. This is just one story about, you know, sex workers, one of the many, right? But for me, the cons to this movie were that it was cis, white, and fucking, like, male.
Keanu is an Asian king, just saying.
Yeah, yeah, one fourth. I don't know,
I think he's like half, but anyways,
yeah. I don't know his makeup, but I know he's been moving through the world like a white man, so
yeah,
just like, yeah. But plenty, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, my cons to this movie is that, you know, it was all of those things, and to me, that's not, I don't expect every story to be all-encompassing of all the times, right? So I believe that now you're able to tell this story and it can find itself onto TV, right? It can, they can put it on Netflix. Back then, this guy couldn't even get funding to make this movie. It was, I think it was, like, made off $2 million, like, tops, everything. In 1991, I mean, it was worth more money back then, but it still wasn't shit. So I'm just saying, like, it's one story. It's not all encompassing of society. I think it was encompassing of the sex workers that they interviewed and the sex workers they were working with. I feel like it was their truth and their reality. So for that, I give it points. But no. I mean, if you're going to tell a story now, you can't, you know, you can't be like the L word. You can't tell like seven different stories because you want to be timely, because you want to be progressive. That's too much. Sometimes you just got to tell what's true to you. And that's what I mean, I fuck with this movie. It's a very strange movie. It doesn't move in like a straight line. So if you're looking for like a clear cut plot and story, you're not going to find that in this movie. He kind of rejects that, you know, point A to point B kind of movement. Like, the guy has narcolepsy. He wakes up and goes to sleep, and there's just lots of in between you're missing out here. So yeah, no, it doesn't have strength in that either. I just really love the movie for its, like, I don't know, its artistry. There's incredible sex scenes in this movie, which was part of an agreement that, like, Keanu Reeves and River Phoenix made with Gus Van Sant. They basically were, like, not down to do actual sex scenes with each other. So that was another thing. What instead the director did was, whenever he had a sex scene between any of the men, he did it, he made them pose, kind of like a photograph, but he took the video and he scanned across the sex scene to make it look like it kind of moved. But it was just like different poses of different sexual acts. Nothing like lewd, though. Not, you didn't really see naked people. They were, you know, naked, of course, but you didn't see any like nudity. So I think even then it was a lot more censored versus the things that are out now, right? Kind of more casually. The movie was, you know... There's a little strange thing I feel about this movie, though, now that I've done my research, is that they did the agreement to not do any, like, sex scenes, and then River Phoenix's own, like, conversations on the side about, like, gay men and gay sex, he was just, like, really, like, put off by the idea publicly, and I thought that was really strange to do a whole movie where you're in love with Keanu Reeves. I mean, who couldn't be in love with Keanu? I'm a little in love with Keanu Reeves, but to be kind of weird about it and be kind of like homophobic about it, right? Like, it's one thing to be like, well, you know, I just don't like, you know, other dudes. It's fine. Like, he kind of really overhyped himself and said some things I didn't agree with about, you know, queer people and queer love. So I don't know. This movie isn't trying to make any bold statements about, like, queer love. It's kind of just saying that you're allowed to exist in 1991, which is already a huge fucking concept. So for that, I give this movie, like, it's one of my favorite movies, but I'm going to just dock it for all the things I said. Maybe, like, 2.5 pandulces.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, it's cis, it's white, and their performances are amazing. But after what I learned about how River Phoenix felt about gay men, and how he didn't agree to, he didn't want to do any kind of sex scenes. And I understand it's 1991 and you're a huge, like, you know, you're going to be kind of huge. I take it
just work for him. Like 20 years.
Yeah. You know, so, yeah, 2.5, but I mean, they get the 2.5 for the acting. Keanu Reeves is probably his best acting he's ever done in his fucking life. And that's saying a lot, but he's honestly doing his best acting in this movie. River Phoenix, he's already a great actor. I kind of don't like him now, so it's fine.
Wow. Well, that's quite the rating.
Yeah. And it's right. I still love this movie. I'm still going to watch it a bunch, but, you know.
Well.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about sex education then.
So much better.
Yeah, it's different from what it sounds like. This sounds like it's just like a drama film versus a television series that is more of a dramedy. But I'm excited to find out what you're comparing about the two. Let's find out. It's a British dramedy series on Netflix. It was released in January of 2019, created by Laurie Nunn, who... I was really surprised to find out she has a very short list of IMDb credits. Like, literally, there's just a few shorts that she's done. And she created this show. She showruns and pretty much writes the shit out of this show.
That's queen shit. I
don't think she's much older than us. Like, she's probably only got a couple of years on us. She's England-born and Australian-raised.
Right.
So I was pretty shook about that. The series, it stars a white cis straight male who plays a white cis straight male. you might recognize Asa Butterfield for his role in The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. He is in this series an awkward teenage boy named Otis. Otis is, at first, he's this like incredibly likable kid because even though he's like the son of a sex therapist, and he spends the most of his time just talking about sex, and he's like interacting with like sex related objects and around these conversations, he's still somehow like really successfully desexualized, and he seems so harmless. And there's a number of ways that they achieved this, because I was really like, after watching season two and then watching season one again, I was like curious. I was like, damn, like this kid's so harmless. And it's because, well, for one, his fucking name is Otis. That's pretty damn desexualized right there.
Damn. Otis isn't a sexy name to you, Maitha?
You know, not at the moment. So pretty quickly, you also find out that he, like, literally can't masturbate. Like, he says at one point that he doesn't like to. Like, what? And then his best friend is Eric, who's
the best person.
Yeah, he's a gay Nigerian, and the best part of the series, that's what I have in my notes.
Yes, he is.
I think he kind of adds to Otis's harmlessness. Like, in the first season, like, Otis is, like, visibly uncomfortable even putting a condom on, like, a fake penis in sex ed class. And the girl next to him is like, dude, you're such a weak bitch. Like... and then later on, he's literally found in the bathroom with, like, a girl, and her boyfriend walks in, and it's not a problem because he's, like, a Care Bear, or that's what the literal dialogue that they use.
Damn.
Like, over and over, there's these little things like this that in first season just make you think of Otis as, like, the least threatening boy in the world. So, now the reason I think that lesbians first flock to the series was because of Gillian Anderson, who is Dr. Jean Milburn. She's a sex therapist who is incredibly open with her sexuality and has a plethora of sexual partners, often much younger than her. And she brings them home where her son has to see them in the morning. And if you haven't guessed it by now, Otis is her son. So... So what does this have to do with sex education? Why are we here? Well, Otis is his extreme, like, exposure to sex and, like, everything surrounding sex because of his mom, he has this like uncanny ability to find out how to fix people's sex problems or like what is ailing them. In this case, he's mostly talking to kids at his school. And so there's another character. She's a young woman and a local badass named Maeve. She realizes, like, yo, I can monetize these skills of yours. And
she's pimping him out. I don't know if that
works. Pretty much, man. Like, this is like a completely different kind of sex work. But yeah, it's so since Otis is like not particularly concerned about money, she tries to kind of appeal to his moral compass. She's telling him, like, yo, the students on this campus need help. They're stupid. And she's right, but he doesn't really care about that either. He just agrees because at the end of the day, he is a teenage boy and he's secretly into Maeve. So he says yes. So to avoid getting spoilery, because that's pretty much where I'm headed at this point, I'm just going to like vaguely list some progressive things about the show, and then I'm going to like really get into it. So there's a storyline surrounding getting an abortion, and for once, like, the deal is done and that character is not like tainted by the procedure. It's not a thing that eternally haunts her. It's very much like just a thing that she has to go through, and it sucks, but like, it's just a thing. Like, it's fine. Another thing that sort of happens is in the first series, the first season at least, it kind of takes on like a issue of the week style, but it doesn't completely go into it. Like, it's not like Law and Order or anything like that. But one of the issues of the weeks, there's a lesbian couple in the first season. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later. So just know that there are lesbians in it. There's also a pair of lesbian moms, actually. And as it's like a mixed race family that they have, like, they also like bring that up later. They don't completely make it like, oh, we're the token family. It's like a whole thing. So there's also discussions around like kinks and like normalizing them and all that kind of stuff. And it actually does have like a lot of sex educational like things. Like, you actually might learn something watching this without it being after school specially. So it's still a good narrative.
Don't kiss or you get pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, if you don't want to get spoiled, just make sure to at least give the series a try. Be warned that there is a lot of sexual activities portrayed in a variety of ways, and many of them with teenage characters. Yeah, there's like a whole penis showing in the first episode. Like, just don't be surprised. So I'm gonna talk about season two. I'm gonna get a little bit spoilery. It's not gonna be like the worst spoiling in the world, but just skip the next few minutes if you don't want to hear it. And if you are skipping forward, rate us 5 stars and leave a review. Okay, thank you. So to begin and kind of end my thoughts on Otis in season two, he kind of became the gross stereotypical teen boy that we expected of him. Just a ton of boners. A lot of inappropriate moments from, like, the start of season two. That's what Otis becomes. He becomes super annoying. He kind of gets knocked down a peg, which is probably necessary. It's super necessary. So moving on from him, let's talk about everybody else that we like.
Yay! The people who matter.
Yep. Exactly. So Eric kind of faces an incredible second season. This is kind of, in general, in television, this is becoming a recurring thing where they bring in this, like, super token character in the first season, and everybody's like, we need more of that guy. Fuck the main person. Like, and then they listen, and then the second season is like, oh, this guy has a standalone storyline now, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, critics and fans, they all fall in love with Eric. He checks a lot of boxes, but he's also amazing. So it basically season two tried to correct a tropey thing that it did with his and Adam's storyline. Adam is this guy who was a bully, and he bullied because of internalized homophobia. And this is kind of a problematic concept. I think that we're all kind of getting to the place where we see that, like, even in real life. And yeah, I just, it's not okay to like insinuate that every homophobe is secretly gay because some people are homophobic because they're stupid, you know? That's another reason.
That's the main reason.
That's most, yeah.
Fucking stupidity.
They're just fucking stupid, yeah. So in season two, he kind of gets the opportunity to explore what it's like to date someone who is respectful and kind to him. This is a concept. And mm-hmm. and listen, this is without a doubt a John Ambrose situation, which, you know, if you're straight, you know what I'm talking about because you watched the second To All the Boys movie. basically,
I had no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah. This is a straight person concept.
Okay.
So the wrong man, but somehow also the right man was chosen. So because love is like complicated, so are Eric's feelings. And I like that it went as deep as it did. It kind of talks about how we get caught up in like the spectacle of a relationship and what's technically right. But eventually we realize that like, if you're not feeling it, like if it's not right for you in your heart or whatever, like it doesn't matter how like perfect everything seems on the outside. And even though, like, yeah, it was a John Ambrose type of thing, I really liked it. It really moved me towards the end.
Did you cry? Did you feel things?
No, I've never done that in my life.
Okay.
So, I know. Yeah, not even once.
Not yeah. one time.
not earlier when I was watching a commercial or anything.
Oh, no. Not during an emotional commercial. How dare you?
Never. So, moving on from Eric, something kind of amazing happens with the girls. And it takes most of the second season to really get there. What happens between them is solidarity. They experience really unique problems in their lives. For example, Amy, towards the beginning of the season, she goes through a thing that's really traumatic that she initially blows off, but it ends up having like a real effect on her. And we see the progression of that trauma, which I like that they like spread it out throughout the season. It's not just like one episode, one and done, she goes through all the motions. But later she realizes that she can't necessarily do it all on her own, and she gets the help from the girls. And that was really an amazing moment. One of my favorite things about the second season as well with one of the girls was Ola realizing that Otis was trash and that girls yes. were where it's at.
Yes.
Like, I swear to God, all the girls are just going through the most interesting shit. Maeve, she's one of the main characters. She, in the first season, was living on her own, a self-sufficient and strong queen. She has to deal with, like, her mother's return, featuring her little sister.
And featuring her little sister. I like that.
Her mother, like, who struggles with addiction, she's mostly, like, a burden to her, but in her, like, the way she kind of sees it is, like, she's trying. She's trying pretty hard, so she, like, lets her in, slowly but surely. And I was happy that her plot was less about boys and more about her and her life this season. Yeah. She also befriends a couple of brothers that move in like nearby who have been in a similar situation as hers, and one of them is physically disabled and he was really cool. He's a sarcastic asshole. His name is Isaac, and so he's worth watching for sure too. And I won't go into how that whole ordeal happens, but she has a whole thing that's pretty tough, but she's a bad bitch. So last but not least, there's the story of Viv. Viv is one of the most interesting characters to me in the season. Her storyline kind of runs next to Jackson's. I haven't talked about Jackson, but he's like this jock dude with lesbian moms. So Viv is like super smart chick. She's a big girl, like myself. And these two have this kind of tropey like type of plot going on where like I'll tutor you in exchange for helping me hook up with this other dude, like, you know, that type of
so 90s.
It's so like fanficky. I don't know, but like I was thinking to myself throughout this whole thing, I was like, they're not going there, and then they weren't, and then like it kind of did like a turn where I was like, maybe they are going there, and then they didn't go there because that's education. Sex education can't, like, I guess it can only be so progressive, but I mean, it doesn't seem like it's like it's conversation over, right? But I do think that if Viv were a different kind of character, aka not big, that it would have been different. You know what I mean? That it would have been, it would have happened. I'll have more to say on that later on. But yeah, we talked previously about like Generation Q and how it kind of failed to connect people with this huge ensemble cast until pretty much the end of the game. Sex Education has an even larger ensemble cast. Like, they have more characters, more plot lines, and all of them have individual stories.
And yet they're better stories and better.
And they all get told. Yeah, they get proper exposition development, and they have the conflict and the resolve. Like, have you guys heard of that?
Wow.
Over at Showtime? Like, jeez. Yeah. It's pretty impressive, though, like, to a point that I was really curious about the writer's room. So what I generally found out was that there wasn't that many writers total for, like, it was a pretty small room. And Laurie Nunn, the creator that I told you guys earlier about, she took the lead on most of the episodes. Like, the first episodes of the seasons and the last couple of the seasons were pretty much her. So... yeah, that's what I found out. I'll probably look into it a little bit more later, but I was just generally impressed because it's a lot of characters. Like, everything that we've talked about, I haven't even gotten into, not even each individual. Like, I didn't even talk about Otis's mom's storyline, mostly because it's, like, super hetero and I get kind of bored with that. But, yeah, it's like I'm scratching the surface and I'm just kind of talking about some general things that I like about the show. But there's so much. You can spoil this series, which is why I had that cutoff point. But at the same time, you can still watch it, even if you have some spoilers, because, like, there's so much going on that I didn't cover.
There's a shit ton that you didn't cover, because there's no way. That would be, like, 3 episodes long of just, like, plot points, like, trying to make them. No, it's good.
Yeah. It's such a good show, though. Like, it's... I don't know. I think watching the second season, I kind of kept going back to a thing that you've been going on about quite a bit lately, which is that, like, we don't need to be seeing teens doing all this stuff anymore. Like, that's a little bit too much. But but in general, outside of those activities, I was very happy with the content.
Do you have, like, a favorite, like, story out of Sex Education?
I liked Ola's a little bit. It wasn't my favorite, though, I don't think. I really liked Viv. I have to decide, like, right now is the thing, because I haven't, like, thought about it. I love Eric's. You know what? It's going to be Eric's storyline with Adam.
Same.
Yeah. Eric's with Adam.
Yeah. I think, like, them doing that, like, centering Eric's, like, love story, that's what I wanted to compare it to, like, you know, to My Own Private Idaho, because whereas you get to see a healthy teenager go through kind of, you know, very, like, sheltered... It's not that bad for Eric, is what I'm saying. It's not great. It's not a wonderful fucking situation. His, like, bully ends up being his boyfriend, right? Like, who wants that energy, right? But at the same time, there was, like, men capable of being sensitive and caring and together in a way that isn't really depicted for Black men, right? We don't ever really get too much of the sensitivity. And I like that he wasn't necessarily just always with the white dude. I like that they were mixing it up. Like, they're, you know, ethnically, you know, or French Muslim dude or white dude, right? Like, I like that there was a variety to who he could pick as well. Versus My Own Private Idaho is just, like, cis white dudes. And like, they were still able to show sensitivity, to be soft with each other and show love. But it was never quite, they couldn't, you know, bridge that gap, right? Versus now, it's 2020 and they've released this amazing fucking show where Eric is a Black gay child of an immigrant, like, and he's able to have, like, a love story. He's able to be centered. I think that's really, like, beautiful growth that they're letting us have something, right? Versus My Own Private Idaho, where you couldn't even get that love out. Like, it was there, it was beautiful, but it wasn't requited. It was an unrequited love, you know? So that's my whole point. And that's why I wanted to kind of talk about, like, they're two different coming of age stories, right? Like, one of them's about the 90s and what that means, right? And now to have this kind of coming of age story that's healthy and kind of realistic, kind of not, right? Because duh, it's TV. But at the same time, you're still able to see these men do something that we're not really seeing a lot of, period, in life. So I thought it was nice.
Yeah, definitely. I also, I guess, just remembered just how much I loved the mom's support in season two for Eric. Because even she kind of had the idea of, like this is a really nice boy, but is he the one type of thing? And his own, his own struggles with wanting someone that maybe respects or understands his faith. I don't know. I just thought that they made it complex, and that was perfect.
Yeah. No, I fucking love that storyline. And then Viv, of course, because when do you ever get to see, like, nerdy, awkward, like, black women other than Misadventures Awkward Black Girl on YouTube, right? Like, there's not a lot of stories out there, and you want as many as possible. And I love that Viv was also, like, you know, a big girl. So I fuck with that a lot. And I love that she was mad awkward and adorable. I was like, wow, like, she's so cute. She's adorable.
Yeah. I don't, I mean, obviously I'm not straight, so I don't completely relate to her story, but I did like the representation of, like, the nerdy fat girl hanging out with, like, a random jock, because that's kind of been my life. Like, I hang out with, like, the most random, like, straight dudes who, like, we happen to get along just swimmingly for some reason. And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's like people that, you know, on the outside you would think there would be a lot of differences, but I mean, realistically, everyone's kind of, you know, it's not that, it's a little bit more nuanced. And I fucking love that story. Ola's story was cool. It you would think it would be my favorite story. It just wasn't. It was cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
I liked her leaving Otis. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all of it. And then, you know, Margot Robbie 2.0, or, you know, gay Margot Robbie, who's straight, sadly enough. I watched her do anything. She's an amazing actress, dude. Like, that, I mean, her acting and giving her a real story outside of a boy, wow. Centering friendship, wow. What a concept. Like, what a fucking show.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, go check that shit out. I would say I give it, like, no cafecitos, if I'm being honest. Like, one cafecito if we're talking about Otis, but, like, since season two really strayed from him or, like, didn't center him as much, I was very happy with it.
Yeah, 5 palooses for me for Sex Education, just based off, like, all the gay shit happening and representation, which, even though this is this made-up reality world of, looks like Seattle, but I think it's Wales. is it Wales? Is that where they speak their own language? I don't know. But yeah.
Welsh.
Yeah. Welsh, yeah.
No, actually, I think that's just the people are called Welsh. I don't know. Don't ask me. Anyways.
Yeah, I think it's South Wales that they're filmed. Anyway, I don't know. But yeah, it's some, like, John Hughes shit, but, like, remix it into now, and then mix, like, American concepts with, like, British people. Yeah.
Yeah,
it works.
They made it seem very high school, where, like, England doesn't really have a high school per se.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, interesting. Okay, well, we've recommended it enough, I think.
Yeah.
Go rate us and review us. That helps a lot. Go support us on Patreon, which that's where our next week's episode is gonna be. And DM us on Instagram and Twitter, CYZ Podcast.
Yeah, send us any recommendations for some movies. We did get a recommendation earlier, and we're going to take a look at that. That could, you know, be a possible thing we probably banter about or deep dive. But yeah, if you have any recommendations for anything queer we haven't discussed here, feel free to DM us.
Hit us at our email, cyzpodcastmail@gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, make sure to buy merch.
If you want to follow me and see my personal thoughts and selfies, that's at MaitePanda.
And mine is at FriedPapita on Twitter.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening.
Bye.